ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So it's quite a different festive sort of time this time around with COVID 19. I'd like to wish everybody happy Diwali. I'd like to wish everybody happy Diwali. Some of my Hindu friends in the community are celebrating Diwali today. Some are celebrating Diwali tomorrow. A wonderful pastime of the residents of Ayodhya. Welcoming Lord Ram back to Ayodhya. From darkness to light is what the Premier and the Prime Minister said in the messages about the whole Diwali program. If you go to the western suburbs, you really know that it is Diwali. The whole suburb of Wyndham is practically lit up with lights everywhere, which is indicative that Diwali is here, and then they keep it up for Christmas, so it's always nice. It's the month of Kartik, and in a different era, we worship the pastimes of Lord Damodar, the incarnation of Krishna as a small little boy. It's an amazing thing when you actually think about it, you know, Damodarastakam, that the Lord of the universe, the most powerful personality of Godhead, manifests himself as a little baby boy. It's just, it sometimes just bewilders my mind how powerful that is, that he can subjugate himself to that extent, that he comes and is the little child in this material world. So today is also, we're celebrating, it's not necessarily exactly the day for it. Some people are again celebrating today, some are celebrating on Monday. Govardhan Puja, Anukut. Usually we have a festival with our friends from the different Hindu communities where we go to Parliament House and celebrate Anukut there. And they provide a big hill of prasadam. Here also for the whole pastimes of Giri Govardhan, we also have a beautiful big hill, and everybody has the ecstatic opportunity of circumambulating the hill with Giri Govardhan on top, with Krishna on top. And this year we're only doing it to a smaller degree, we're still doing it, but 20 very fortunate individuals who booked in well in advance get the opportunity to run around the hill. We're not envious at all, but good luck to you. Anyway, so we'll be doing it in our minds, obviously. So today I wanted to read about the pastimes of Govardhan Hill and Krishna lifting the Govardhan Hill. So I wanted to read the summaries of both chapter 24 and 25 of this pastime of Krishna where he actually lifts Govardhan Hill for the residents of Vrindavan. And then I wanted to just go over the last summary of it and just analyse just one point from what we can learn from this Govardhan Leela. And so I'll start with that. So chapter 24, just to get the story of what's happening, and it's always good to read these pastimes on these auspicious days. Chapter 24 of Srimad Bhagavatam is as follows. Worshipping Govardhan Hill. In this chapter, Lord Krishna crushes the pride of Indra by prohibiting a sacrifice intended for him and initiating a substitute sacrifice and worship of Govardhan Hill. When Sri Krishna saw the cowherd men busily preparing for a sacrifice to Indra, he inquired about it from their king, Nanda. Nanda explained that the rain given by Indra enables all living entities to maintain their lives, and therefore this sacrifice would be executed to satisfy him. And Krishna responded, "It is because of karma alone that the living entities take their birth in certain bodies and experience the varieties of happiness and suffering in that body, and then give it up as karma pertaining to its run out. Thus, it is karma alone that is our enemy, our friend, our guru, and our lord. And Indra can do nothing to alter the happiness and distress of anyone, for everyone is tightly bound by his karmic reactions. The material modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance bring about the creation, maintenance, and destruction of this world. The clouds give forth rain when they are impelled by the mode of passion, and cowherdsmen prosper by protecting the cows. Furthermore, the cowherders prosper residence in the forest and on the hills. Therefore, you should offer worship to the cows, the brahmanas, and Govardhan Hill. After Krishna thus spoke, he arranged for the cowherd men to worship Govardhan with the paraphernalia collected for sacrifice to Indra. He then assumed a large, unprecedented, transcendental form and devoured all the food and other offerings presented to Govardhan. As he did so, he proclaimed to the cowherd community that although they had worshipped Indra for so long, he had never appeared in person, whereas Govardhan himself had now manifested before their eyes and eaten their offerings of foodstuffs. Therefore, they should all now offer obeisances to Govardhan Hill, and then Lord Krishna joined the cowherds in offering obeisances to his newly assumed form. So the next summary of chapter 25 is Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill. In this chapter, it describes how Lord Indra was overcome by anger when the residents of Raja cancelled his sacrifice. He tried to punish them by sending forth a devastating rainfall to Vrindavan, and how Lord Krishna protected Gokula by lifting Govardhan Hill, and for 7 days using it as an umbrella to ward off all the rain. Indra, angered by the disruption of his sacrifice meant for him, and falsely presuming him the supreme controller, said, "People often give up their pursuit of transcendental knowledge, the means for self-realization, and imagine that they can cross over the ocean of material existence by mundane fruitive sacrifices. Similarly, these cowherd men have become intoxicated by pride and have offended me by taking shelter of an ignorant, ordinary child, Krishna." To remove this supposed pride for the residents of Raja, Indra sent the clouds known as Samantaka, whose function is to facilitate the destruction of the world. He sent them to harass the Rajavasis with downpours of rain and hail. He sent them to harass the hail. The cowherd community was very disturbed by this and approached Krishna for shelter. Understanding that this trouble was the work of Indra, Krishna decided to smash to pieces Indra's false prestige. And thus he lifted Govardhan Hill with one hand. He then invited the cowherd men, the cowherd community, to take shelter in that dry space beneath the mountain. For 7 successive days he held up the hill until Indra finally understood Krishna's mystic power and ordered the clouds to withdraw. When the cowherd villagers emerged from beneath the mountain, Krishna put Govardhan Hill back in its proper place. The cowherds were in ecstasy, showing loving symptoms such as flowing tears and bodily hairs standing on end. They embraced Krishna and offered him benedictions according to their respective positions, while the demigods in heaven rained down flowers and sang the Lord's pastimes and praises. So we're reading from, after that we're reading from just chapter 1, text 1. Shri Sukha Uvacha, Indras Tadatma Puhujam, Vinaya Vinhataya Nirpa, Topibhya Krishna Natebhyo, Nandi Bhaja Kupoha, Shri Sukhu Vacha, Indrastadatmana Pucham, Vinjana Vihatam Nipa, Topebhya Krishna Natebhyo, Nandibhya Schu Kapoha. Shri Sukha Vacha, Ladies?
Sri Sukha Vacha.
Sri Sukha Vacha. Indrasana Pujana. Vidyaya Tangapa. Govya Krishna Tayo.
Sri Sukha Uvacha.
Sukadeva
Goswami said, Indraha, Lord Indra, Tada, then, Atmanaha, his own, Pujam, worship, Vijnana, understanding, Vihatam, diverted, Nripa, O King Parikshit, Gopibhya, at the cowherds, Krishna Natebhya, who took Krishna as their Lord, Nanda Adibhya, headed by Nanda Maharaj, Kukopaha, he became angry. Translation. Sukadeva Goswami said, my dear King Parikshit, when Indra understood that his sacrifice had been put aside, he became furious with Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men who were accepting Krishna as their Lord. Purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. At the very beginning of this chapter, Sukadeva Goswami reveals that the foolishness of Indra and the absurdity of his anger, Indra was frustrated because the residents of Vrindavan accepted Sri Krishna as their Lord. But the simple fact is that Sri Krishna is the Lord, not only of the residents of Vrindavan, but of all that exists, including Indra himself. Thus Indra's petulant reaction was ridiculous. As the common saying goes, pride goes before a fall. I'll read the second text as well. Translation, angry Indra sent forth clouds of universal destruction, known as Samataka. Imagining himself the superior, supreme controller, he spoke as follows. Purport again, this word Ishamani here is very significant. Indra arrogantly considered himself to be the Lord, and thus he exhibited the typical attitude of a conditioned soul. Many thinkers in the 20th century have noted the exaggerated sense of individual prestige characteristics of our culture. Indeed, writers have even coined the phrase, the me generation. Everyone in this world is more or less guilty of the syndrome called Ishamana, or proudly considering oneself the Lord. Omagana Timiranda Syaganandana Salakaya Chakshura Militamena Tasma Sri Guru Namaha. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimadi Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namini. Namaste Sarasvati Devam Bhodavani Pacharini Nebhisesha Srinivani Pasha Chade Satarini. Sri Krishna Jaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasati Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Sukadeva Goswami said, dear King Parikshit, when Indra understood that his sacrifice had been put aside, he became furious with Nanda Maharaj and these other cowherd men who accepted Krishna as their Lord. So let's analyze this a little bit more carefully. There are so many different aspects from this Govardhan Leela that we can actually learn from. First and foremost, this is a fantastic story. It's not just a story, it's history. Now, when I deal with a lot of the broader Hindu community, they like to think of these stories and they like to listen to these pastimes. But unfortunately, some of them think that this is simply mythology, that somehow or other this is just a story that is told for our benefit to learn from, which it is. But it's not mythology, it's actually history. These events actually happened 5,000 years ago. Krishna was on this planet. And sometimes, even with our Western colleagues, they find that very difficult to understand that these amazing things can happen. But that's the nature of God. God can do anything. To lift a hill is nothing for him. And so we have to really understand that all these topics in Srimad Bhagavatam and all the different Vedic scriptures are real. They're history. And we should see it as such. It's not just mythology. So the topic for today, which I wanted to talk about, was commented on in the purport here, pride goes before a fall. So pride is a really interesting thing to talk about when we can analyze this. And what I'll do is I'll read from the summary verses, summary first off, and then take some points. So this chapter, as I mentioned before, describes how Lord Indra overcome by anger when the residents of Raja cancelled his sacrifice. He tried to punish them by sending forth devastating rain to Vrindavan, and how Lord Sri Krishna protected Gokul by lifting Govardhan Hill for 7 days, using it as an umbrella to ward off the rain. Indra, angered at the disruption of the sacrifice meant for him, and falsely presuming himself to be the controller, said, "People often give up the pursuit of transcendental knowledge, means of self-realization, and imagine that they can cross over the ocean of material existence by mundane fruitive sacrifices. Similarly, these cowherd men have become intoxicated with pride and have offended me by taking shelter of this ignorant, ordinary child Krishna." So actually it was Indra who was completely captivated by pride, completely overwhelmed, thinking that somehow or other he is the supreme controller. Now pride is a sin that affects all people. It is something that all of us have to deal with. It is a very subtle thing. But the pride that can manifest causes tremendous difficulty and misery throughout human history. If we look at history and we evaluate history, we see that pride is the cause of so much devastation that has happened throughout the world. As it was mentioned in the second purport, in today's society, this idea of the me generation, everything revolves around my personal enjoyment. This is this atheistic philosophy. This actually came about actually early in the 18th century. It started off with Darwin, but there was always prior to that. But somehow or other, this whole creation is nothing but for my facility. There is no God. Everything happened by chance. But somehow or other, I can enjoy whatever is here for my enjoyment. So it's this me generation. And you see this in today's society. People are completely wrapped up in how things are affecting them. This is affecting me. This is disturbing me. We have to do these things because it is upsetting me. Like the COVID-19 thing, there's a general mood of doing things right for everyone, for the welfare of everyone. But a lot of people get upset. I'm disturbed by this because it's affecting me. I'm sure this could be answered in different ways, but perhaps the first thing to say is that pride is not actually a sin which is committed outright, like, say, murder, tax evasion, adultery, or something like that. It's a much more subtle thing. It's actually an attribute of the heart and the way of thinking. That, like, say, for example, you've got the analogy of the wind. You can't see the wind, but it has an effect. So similarly, egoistic pride leads to sinful things. Indra wanted to destroy the residents of Vrindavan. Now sometimes we overlook this, of what Indra actually wanted to do. Indra wanted to cause devastation. Now this is how deep pride actually goes. Now they had been diligently worshipping Indra, the residents of Vrindavan, nicely doing it every year, giving him all attributes, giving him a big festive and thing. So out of love, they were doing that, out of appreciation and gratitude. And Indra sat back and enjoyed this. Now that one time that they didn't do that, he became really angry. And to the extent that he wanted to destroy the residents of Vrindavan. So say, for example, if your child always, you know, gives you a present for your birthday, say, for example, a child sees the parent as something really to look upon, very powerful personality in their lives. And so a child may work hard at giving a present to the parent. Now one year the child forgets and doesn't want to give a present to the parent. Does the parent turn around and say, "I'm going to kill you? How dare you? You have forgotten my birthday?" No. But this is what Indra actually wanted to do. He was so upset that he wanted to commit genocide. He wanted to kill all the residents of Vrindavan. Men, women, children, cows, animals, everything. Just destroy. This is the mentality of a psychopath. Someone that is insane with anger. And we've seen that throughout history. People such as Pol Pot, people such as Hitler, Stalin, because of their own selfish desire, they are willing to kill everybody. It still goes on to this very day. So this was Indra. This was what was driving Indra. But he was angry because he thought this change of direction by the residents of Vrindavan was interfering with his enjoyment, his satisfaction. So they diligently worshipped him, and all of a sudden he hated the fact that they'd stopped. So this is insanity, from appreciation to hatred. There's actually a huge tornado, actually. If you want to see, if you want to get an experience of what the residents of Vrindavan were actually feeling at this stage, there is a huge, you know about this one, don't you, Prabhu? There's a huge tornado happening in Malaysia at the moment. There's about 50 or so people have been killed so far. So the devastation is just unbelievable. The sadness, the pain and agony is painful. So this is what he wanted to do. And he wanted to remove the so-called pride of the residents of Raja. So that's why he sent the Shamataka for clouds in. Again, from the summary, it says he sent them to harass the Vrajavasis with downpours of rain and hail. The cowherd community was very disturbed by this and approached Krishna for shelter. Now, being the devotees, the Vrajavasis always, always turned to Krishna when there was a calamity, when there was a difficulty. And this is an example that we can learn from as well. That any time there is torment, any time there's a difficulty, we turn to Krishna. So we can see right through the whole Bhagavatam, all the different Bhagavatam, there are different parts in that, Sri Prahlad, and you know, where there is incredible difficulty. And simply by turning to Krishna, Krishna protects the devotee. So the devotees know that Lord Krishna is the only enjoyer. The devotees know this, that Krishna is actually the only enjoyer. And will do all activities simply to please him. And a materialist actually sees this as the greatest threat to their enjoyment. That somebody else is an enjoyer? This is not right. I want to enjoy. And so they see this as the greatest threat and greatest opposition. So the devotees of Vrindavan were totally surrendered towards Lord Krishna and appealed to him. You know, Indra said, I'm the only enjoyer and I'll do what pleases me. So the mentality here is, this is the mentality throughout the material world. And this has actually brought us to this material world. Somehow or other, we have this selfish notion that we want to be the enjoyers. And so this is the difficulty that we have to face. Summary again. Understanding that this trouble was the work of Indra, Krishna decides to smash to pieces Indra's false prestige. So Krishna can do that. Sometimes we need to be smashed a little bit to bring us back down to reality. And that's why it says here, pride goes before a fall. So one could be pride, but then eventually there will be a fall. So that to smash to pieces Indra's false prestige. And thus he lifted Govardhan Hill with one hand, his left hand, the little pinky. He then invited the entire cowherd community to take shelter in the dry space beneath the mountain. For 7 successive days, he held up the hill until Indra finally understood Krishna's mystic power and ordered the clouds to withdraw. It took this guy 7 days. Hello? There's a huge mountain. This little boy lifts him out with a little pinky. All the residents of Vrindavan, all the cows and everything were taking shelter under this huge umbrella. It took him 7 days to figure out that, hey, this person is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is a show of power, actually. He's a total ignorant sort of person. Indra thought he had power over less powerful living entities and he could do what he wants. Because of that power, he pleased himself, and feeling unappreciated, he would inflict brutal punishment. So it's all a question of balance of power. You know, so if you have power over someone, you can actually be quite nasty in different aspects. Just like in today's society, there are many ways one has power over another, and that can serve their own interests. The classic example, which Prabhupada emphasized, is the killing of animals, killing of mother cow, killing of the animal. Somehow or other, we humans seem to be stronger, more intelligent than our animal brothers and sisters. And so somehow or other, we feel it's okay to kill another living creature for our own satisfaction because we like the taste of meat. I remember that feeling of power before I became a devotee. Believe it or not, and we're all coming from rotten backgrounds, but when I was a student, I had an opportunity to work on a duck farm. And part of this duck farm was the slaughtering of ducks. And there was one man who was the slaughterman, and he would slit the throats of all the ducks. I know this is an uncomfortable thing to talk about, but this happened. And he was blatant, he was cruel. And sometimes a duck would get away, and he felt this power rising up in them. He was superior to the duck, and I'll show you, you shouldn't have escaped from my clutches where I was, you know, because they'd hang up the ducks to slit their throats. And this duck would get away, you know, and he was angry. How could you do this? The duck, you know, I'm doing my job here. So out of punishment to the duck, he would grab the duck's head and smash it with his fist, kill it. So I was working in this environment, and one day a duck escaped, and this man said, "Get the duck." And I said, "Okay." So I grabbed the duck. This is in total ignorance. This is where we're all from. And I grabbed the duck, and I held the duck in my hand, its head in my hand. And he said, "Smash it." And I felt this power. I had power over his life, this living entity's life. And I looked at its eyes, and its eyes looked back at me. And I went, to this day, I see that duck's eye. And I understand the lesson that I had to learn when I came to Krishna consciousness. This was pride. This was power over another living entity. We've all done these sort of things. Before we became devotees, it was nothing for us to eat chicken, beef, anything like that. It was all okay. We didn't even think about where and the suffering that the cow or the chicken or the lamb or the pig went through. It was my enjoyment. I don't care what it takes. So these are the key interests that power over another can serve one's interests. The environment is another thing. We don't care about the environment. Again, this Mayavada philosophy, this, both the atheist philosophy and the Mayavada philosophy thinks, well, it's all just illusion anyway, I can do what I damn well like. It's a big thing within the Hindu community at the moment to take seriously the environmental threat to this planet. Because the Mayavada thinks, oh, well, it's all just material, it's all illusion. I'm here just to find out who I really am. I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so I don't give a damn about the environment. That's even sometimes that atheistic or that Mayavadi consciousness is sometimes with devotees as well. Unfortunately, I have to say that. Sometimes we disregard cleaning things, looking after things, becoming environmentally conscious. That this planet is a personality as well. By mistreating that planet, it's again, I've got power over another living entity and I'll do what I like because my importance is the most important thing. The other area is in obvious areas, such as abortion, where a woman says, I want to have an abortion because it's stopping this pregnancy, is stopping my enjoyment. I'm going to be shackled with this child for God knows how long, 20 years at least. I don't want to have that responsibility. I'll just eradicate that thing from my life. But that thing is a living entity, a growing person. And this is, again, because of selfishness, because of pride, people do that. Other things, this is euthanasia. Recently we had this whole debate with the government. The government wants to bring in this euthanasia bill. That if a person has reached their time of illness and, you know, desires to end this life, they can just kill themselves. It's not their property, but they can kill themselves. So we were arguing, all the religious leaders within Melbourne were arguing, this is not a right thing to do. Conquering over another's property, conquering over one's own property, destroying your own body with intoxicants. So we see that even within our communities, sometimes we see there's a power imbalance between the men and the women. Sometimes, and we've had these programs recently where we had the family violence issues brought to the fore and presented to devotees that this is now not an acceptable thing, where a man has power over a woman within marriage and dominates. You'll do as I say. This is not, again, this is just a selfish example. And another thing that I wanted to bring up, which I sometimes see in devotees' homes, which is really a disturbance sometimes, when a person actually is disturbed by an insect, this little insect, you know, maybe a spider crawling on a wall in their home or something, or a fly has entered into the house or something, or there are ants, there's a trail of ants or something, or there's a moth. Now these animals, these living creatures, are not doing any harm except trying to live in your environment. But even devotees sometimes go, it's a fly. You know? Or there's a spider and they get a, kill the spider. You know what you're doing? This is disturbing my existence, and I have power over this living entity, I can kill it. Prabhupada actually was very, very strong in this area. The devotees were actually asking Prabhupada one time when there was the problem with mice. In one of the temples. And they asked Prabhupada, can we get an exterminator in? You know, and he said, you should be killed, not the mice. So you have to think in ways that will not afflict your desire over another living entities. This is exactly Indra's consciousness. I want to enjoy. I'm the recipient of your service, and all of a sudden you've stopped this. Well, I'll put an end to that. I'll kill you. I'll kill you all. I'll kill your babies. I'll kill your children. I'll kill your wives, your husbands, your pets, everything. This was his theme. So again, the summary is, when the cowherd villages emerged from beneath the mountain, Krishna put Govardhan Hill back in its proper place. Cowherds were in ecstasy, showing loving symptoms such as flowing tears, bodily hairs standing on end. They embraced Krishna and offered him benediction according to their respective positions, while the demigods in heaven rained down flowers and sang praise to the Lord. I mean, the devotees were actually in ecstasy as soon as Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill. That one. As soon as Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill. Because the residents of Vrindavan never really got a time to spend with Krishna on a regular basis. You know, Krishna would leave in the morning to go and herd the cows with the cowboys in the pastures and everything. Then at night time he'd come home. So at best, the residents of Vrindavan would see Krishna coming back at night time or leaving in the morning. And that would bring ecstasy to them to see Krishna. Now here they are, under the protection of Krishna, this fantastic umbrella. You know, and Krishna's right there for everyone to see. For everyone to see. And they can all have that pastime. So they were actually very, very jubilant. They were in ecstasy. I'm with Krishna, you know. Everything's okay. The cows were happy. They were chanting. They were dancing. You know. And some of them thought, oh, this little boy, he must be having difficulty holding up this big mountain by himself. We'll prop up some sticks and help him with it, you know. Now, Krishna appreciates that. He didn't need their support. But Krishna appreciates just that ability to help the Lord. So that after the mountain was put back, they were full of praise for Krishna. This was an amazing event. Can you imagine Can you imagine in our lifetime, say for example, what's the biggest mountain we have here in Victoria? Or in, well, we can't say the Yu Yangs, that's not that big. But let's say the biggest mountain in Australia is Mount Kosciuszko. Has anybody been to Mount Kosciuszko? It's a big mountain. Can you imagine what it would be like if all of a sudden Krishna came and for some reason or other it was a nuclear bomb or something and he said, I'm going to lift up Mount Kosciuszko on my little pinky and all the residents of Melbourne, all the devotee residents can gather underneath to protect themselves. It would be absolutely out and we'd be in ecstasy. So this is what happened in history in Vrindavan at that time. This factually happened. So this is God. Lord Krishna is God. He's so powerful. This was nothing for him. This is just an absolute joke to him, just to simply do this. Now, atheists think that this story, as I mentioned, is not truth. And yet, you know, because this is fantastic. How could this be? You know, I mean, this is just ridiculous. An atheist, a materialist, thinks this is all mythology. But yet they can't see that God's power is everywhere. It simply means they just have this mentality of selfishness that they can't see beyond their own selves. Krishna's power is there in the subatomic structures and the massive cosmic structure. Everything is going to the minutest order. From a subatomic structure, when you go into quantum physics and studying the finer particles of existence, everything is so orderly. Everything works in relation with the other. And when you go to the astrological manifestation of the cosmos, they're now understanding that there are billions of universes, unlimited universes. This is not just a product of chance, and everything is working exactly as it should. If you just talk to a person, an atheist, tell them, ask them to explain the sun, how the sun can radiate so much light, it never diminishes in light, it never burns out. It's not like there's a certain limit to the amount of potency of the sun. It continually keeps growing, giving us light, and that light generates energy for things to grow, it gives warmth and everything. They can't explain it. Well, that's just a fantastic thing, we can't explain that. But it's Krishna. That's why when we say our Gayatri every morning, the first thing we do is we offer oblations to the sun, the power of the sun, and how it heals us. So Krishna is amazing, God is amazing. So when Indra finally realized his mistake, he humbly submitted to the Lord. Well, it's a bad time. After so much devastation, after so much turmoil, he finally thought, I'd better beg forgiveness. So he did that. And the Lord is always forgiving to those who surrender to him, no matter what the horrendous crime is that they've committed. And he committed a horrendous crime. And Krishna forgives. This is the mercy of the Lord. And if we're sincerely sorry for our actions and strive not to do this sin again, then the Lord forgives us. In the Bhagavad Gita, it says, Sarvadharma Paritragyam Namikam Saranam Prajam. You know, just, I shall deliver you. Krishna gives us a guarantee. Don't fear. Just surrender to me and I'll protect you. It's okay. The epitome of pride was exhibited by Indra. And that pride brought about such devastation and such turmoil and such horrific event. And yet it was a glorious event. When his pride was smashed, when he finally realized that Krishna is God, he was jubilant and forgiven by Krishna. You know? So we see throughout the Shastra, especially in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the most criminal people, Jagai and Madani, who were rascals. They were murderers, they were rapists, they were the most horrible people. And yet, by the mercy of Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya, they were forgiven. So there's hope for us, for all the sins that we've committed. Like the duck whose life I've taken. And so many other things during my life as a non-devotee and as a devotee also. Krishna forgives if we are sincere. So I want to read a section from Bhagavad Gita 3:27, the verse Prakriti Kri Manani Guna Kamani Savasha Ahamkara Vibhudatma Karta Hamati Manyate Ahamkara Vibhudatma. False ego, bewildered by false ego, the bewilderment of thinking that somehow or other I'm important. Prabhupada says, the bewildered soul, and that's what we're all under. Under the influence of the three modes of material nature, we get that baggage when we come to this material world, think himself the doer of activities which are in actuality carried out by nature. In the purport, Prabhupada says, two persons, one in Krishna consciousness and the other in material consciousness, working on the same level, may appear to be working on the same platform, but there is a wide gulf of difference in their respective positions. The person in material consciousness is convinced by false ego that he is the doer of everything, just like Indra. He does not know that the mechanisms of the body is produced by material nature, which work under the supervision of the Supreme Lord, both microcosm and macrocosm. The person in false ego takes all credit for doing everything independently, and that is the symptom of his nescience. He does not know that the gross and subtle body is the creation of material nature under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and as such his bodily and mental activities should be engaged in the service of Krishna. The ignorant man forgets that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Rishikesh, the master of the senses of the material body. But due to his long misuse of the senses in sense gratification, he is factually bewildered by false ego, which makes him forget his eternal relationship with Krishna. We have forgotten our relationship with Krishna. Before we became devotees, we gave in to the self-interest. It was me first. Whatever is best for me. That's our mentality. But even after becoming a devotee, we begin and we start to see what is God's will. The latent pride in nature forces me to do many things that are foolish, selfish and hurtful to others still, even as a devotee. The conditioning of pride is so strong, it's deep within us, this pride. Therefore, for me to think soberly, to understand that I have much to be saved from, personally we still have so much to be saved from, because we are all fallen conditioned souls. That's the truth. There is much to be learned still, even as a devotee, even after 40 years as a devotee, there is still so much that we have to learn. And we can learn these lessons from going over all the pastimes toward Krishna. That's why Prabhupada emphasizes the importance of reading Bhagavatam, but also celebrating these festival days, where we stop and actually think, how is this impacting on my life? Not that we just have a celebration and that we enjoy each other's company and sing and dance and everything. That's good. But we should also analyze these different aspects of these pastimes of the Lord and these special events. Like Govardhan Puja, we should delve deep. What is the messages behind that? Same with Damodar Astakam. What is the message? What's the power behind it? How can I relate that back to my own life? There's so much still for us to learn. It doesn't stop. The learning doesn't stop. First and foremost, from God, through the scriptures. That's where we learn. Then through our gurus, our teachers, our mentors, each other people that God uses to help us. You know, we have to learn in different ways. But if I'm proud, if I think I know and understand everything, and I'm good enough to manage without the help, we're in deep trouble. And we see that sometimes. Don't tell me, I know what I'm doing. We've got to be honest and open enough to be able to expect someone will help us and guide us. Prabhu, it might be better if you do this and this. We can't have this mentality of saying, I know, I understand, that's it, don't talk to me about that. We need help. Even after 40 years, 50 years of devotional service, we need help. We need each other's help. We need the support and understanding of all our God brothers and sisters. We need the steadiness of our sadhana to keep this pride in check. Our sadhana is so important. When we have that sadhana diligently, whether it's COVID-19 restrictions or whatever, if we have our sadhana where we're chanting our rounds properly, if we're following the regulative principles properly, if we're reading Prabhupada's books properly, reading about these pastimes, celebrating these pastimes, praying to Krishna, asking Krishna when we are in front of the deity of Krishna or a picture of Krishna, every day praying to Krishna, please don't let this pride come into me. Please allow me to remain humble. Please allow me to remain grateful of what I've got as a devotee. And then associating with like-minded people, having that association. We're not an island, we're not alone. We need that support of others. And then presenting this philosophy to others. Because it's by preaching and presenting this philosophy to others in all various means, it eradicates pride from within us. Because we start to realize these truths ourselves when we preach. So how can we notice pride in ourselves? We need to interact with other people and circumstances. When we interact with others in the normal circumstances of life, it won't be long that after a period of time, there'll be anger, resentment, irritation, envy, grumbling, and complaining. And they all raise their ugly little heads. We all know that as grihasthas and as brahmacharis, you're living in close connection with people. There's anger, there's disputes, there's grumbling. Why are you angry today, Bhakta? Oh, I didn't sleep well, you know, or something like that. Just go away, you're annoying me. So all these things are there. When we interact with others in normal circumstances, that's when we actually see our pride. Now, a rich person or a privileged person sometimes, who has everything, falls prey to pride very easily. It's like a spoiled child. If a child has got everything, if you take something away from them, they become really upset. How can you do that? And we see this playing out even in political leaders throughout the world. You take something away from someone that is envious by nature, who's full of pride. I am the best. This has never been as good as this. I have done so much. I'm the best person, president, that's ever been. So full of pride. And when Krishna says, you big red-headed nonsense, off the stage. No, I'm not going. It was actually very interesting. And no, I won't go there. It's okay. So we all know who we're talking about. So that we see this even in political life, spoiled child. And this happens so often. They'll do anything to destroy, even if it means destroying a country, even if it means upsetting and destroying other people, I don't care. It's me that's important. I'm important. So the question sometimes people raise is, sometimes people say, what's wrong with being proud sometimes? What's wrong with that? Nothing. If your pride is directed in a devotional direction. I'm personally proud that I'm a devotee. I'm proud of it, that I'm a devotee. And we should be proud. We should stand firm. So I'm proud of being a devotee. I'm proud of being a grandson of Srila Prabhupada. I'm proud of being the disciple of one of his disciples. I'm proud of that. I don't shun away from it. Even in public life, I don't shun the fact that I'm a devotee. And the fact that we're proud of our position, that's good. It's not that I'm puffed up or I think that I'm better than someone else. Oh, I'm a devotee and you're... Like in my interfaith dealings, I can't have the attitude of thinking, I'm a devotee, mate, I know so much more than you. You know? Because I've seen... In my brothers and friends from other faith traditions, they have much more faith in God than I have. And they're not even following the same principles as I'm following. They have much more love for God than I have. And I'm thinking, how can I possibly think, oh, I'm a devotee, I've got all the truth, you don't know anything. So I've got to maintain a pridelessness. But in the same token, I'm exceptionally proud to represent Srila Prabhupada. We should be proud with that. We should be proud to wear a Kunti Mala. We should be proud to chant Hare Krishna in public. We should be proud to present Krishna consciousness in a positive way. You know, so this pride is good. There's no wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. You should be proud of your service. You know, I'm doing this for Krishna. Like we see today, Govardhan Puja. The devotees have developed this beautiful altar and they've decorated Srila Prabhupada, these beautiful flower arrangements. It's not that they sit back and say, I don't even know who made these, but whoever did it must feel a sense of fulfillment. I've done something to please Krishna. I've done something to please Srila Prabhupada. And I'm proud of that. Nothing wrong with that. This feeling of satisfaction or joy which comes because I, my family, my colleagues, my friends have achieved something worthwhile is complete when that action is for God. It's complete when that action is for God. If we do something, it's 10 times better when we do it. Who was giving a story recently? Radhanaswami was interviewing this, I won't mention his name, had a talk with this well-known non-devotee kirtan leader, if that's obvious to everybody, right? So he was saying, actually, he was confessing to Radhanaswami Maharaj, that actually, you know, I have kirtans that fill stadiums with thousands of people. If I'm paid for that kirtan, I don't get anything out of it. Nothing moves me inside. Yet when I do a kirtan which is free at a temple or something like that, so that's when I get connected with Krishna. So it's all to do with connecting with Krishna. And it can be in any field. We're all different. We all have different propensities and abilities. But if we use that in Krishna's service, you know, then we actually get the full benefit of that. It was interesting, I was speaking to Achintya Rupa the other day, and I was talking about the benefits of deity worship. And when you learn how to do deity worship, that's why Prabhupada instilled it into this society, how important deity worship is, but particularly under the direction of Srila Prabhupada. When we actually do the creative thing of deity worship, we are actually not doing something to say, look at me, look how nice. We're doing it under the direction of Krishna. Krishna actually inspires you from within. If you're honestly doing it in a prideless way, in just as a service way, when you actually dress the deities, it's done under the direction of Krishna. Those that have done deity worship understand how Krishna from within, the deity from within will tell you what they want to wear. And it happens so many times. And when it happens to you, it's like you get goosebumps, isn't it? You think, my God. Like you're sitting there and you're dressing and you've gone into the deity room with a plan. Now I'm going to do this. It's going to look really smashing. People are going to love this. And then Krishna turns around and says, no, no, no. I want my turban to be like this. I want the jewelry to be like this. I want my cloth to be like this. And you go, okay, Lord. And you do it. And it's a selfless act. It's like all of a sudden you've had that connection. So the things that we learn from doing deity worship then translates into the broader things, into the broader world, into our activities in the broader world. Whatever that may be, maybe a computer scientist, it could be a preacher, it could be book distributor, it could be an artist, a painter or whatever. You actually feel Krishna's hand guiding you if it is done without pride, if it's done as a service to Krishna. It's an amazing thing. So we're learning all the time. So some examples of pride. I wanted to just bring this finally to a nub. There are many, many ways that the effect of pride are manifested in ways a person behaves or what a person does, even in our devotional lives. And we should check these things and understand, witness is happening to us. We have to become very competent to be a witness. Just like in the deity room, when you hear Krishna telling you, I don't want it to be done like this, I want it to be done. What happens is you're a witness. You're a bystander. Yes, Krishna, I'll do it that way. Similarly, when these manifestations of pride affect us, we should stand aside and witness. Ah, here goes your ego again. Here goes the pride. So some of those examples are as follows. Being offended. Being offended. Because I or my family have been treated in this way, This was beneath us. I or we should have had better or fairer treatment. Don't you know that I'm a devotee of 40 years? How dare you not give the flowers to me first? You felt it. Witness it. And say, back off. Don't you understand that I'm a Brahmin? You know? Witness it and act on it. So we're here to learn all these different things. And these come up in our lives all the time. Don't you understand that I'm the man of the house? Things like that. The next one. Getting angry. How dare people treat me like that or talk to me in such a way? I'm so important. You know? So sometimes people need to be, you know, maybe our authority or someone tells us in no uncertain terms you did something wrong. Was angry. And so we should be able to again witness that for ourselves and not get angry, just hold ourselves back. The same thing, being passive or inactive. Because I don't feel like I can do something perfectly, I might make a mistake and look stupid. So I can't be perfect, so I'm not going to do anything at all. You know? Oh, Prabhu, you made a mistake with your deity worship. Oh, you made a mistake in your preaching. Oh, you made a mistake in cleaning something. Oh, well, then I just won't do it. I won't do it anymore. Again, that's pride comes in. So we should check that. Similarly, by silence and saying nothing, or silence and saying something, because I might say something that is a mistake, so you don't say anything. I'm not going to say anything here, you know, because if I say something, it may make me out like I'm stupid or something, so I won't say anything. Being agitated or unrestful, because people have been speaking negatively about me, behind my back, I can't bear the reproach or dishonor, so I have to run around trying to explain my actions and motives. You know, sometimes you hear on the grapevine, oh, did you know that Bhakta actually does this and this and this? And they go, where did you hear that? No, that's not true. You know, again, becoming agitated and unrestful. They have to get the right picture of me. Bhakta would never do that. I'm not like that. Even if the thing was wrong, who cares? Really? Let it go. The other thing is boasting. This is a big thing. Boasting. Because when I tell an incident or recount an event, it's very important for me that I do so in a way that puts me in the best possible light. Prabhu, you should have seen me on Sankirtan the other day. Man, I cleaned up. I was so good. I distributed so many books. You know, Prabhupada would be really pleased with me. You know, I'm now the regional secretary of such and such, and I'm really powerful, I tell you. I'm worthwhile taking note of. Boastful. Pride. Be gentle. Prabhupada was never boastful. He understood that he was simply the servant of the servant of the servant. Even when he did such glorious things, there has not been a spiritual teacher on this planet as powerful as Srila Prabhupada. Never was there a more powerful personality to present God consciousness. And the immediate effect of his preaching is right there before us. Thousands, millions of people have taken to this Krishna consciousness. You know, and never once did he say, oh, I really did a good job. He cried when people glorified him. He said, it's only by the mercy of my Guru Maharaj, and it's only by the mercy of you people that have come to help me. That's real. That's real. That's what we have to invoke. He's the example for that. The next one is lying. Telling a lie. Because if I tell the truth, people will think badly of me and might get into trouble. And it's vital that everybody thinks well of me. Oh, Prabhu, I've never fallen down. Lie. Oh, no, that's fine. No. Be honest. And then it allows you to grow. Despising other people. Because they do things differently to me and I think my way is better, more cultured, more refined, or I think they are less clever, gifted, or well off. And in any case, by putting other people down, I feel myself a little bit more superior. Look at the way I put on my dhoti. Look at the way he puts on his dhoti. Look at the cruddy looking sari that person is wearing. Look at my sari. And I've just got so much, such nice tilak. You know? All these things are there, and they're all aspects of pride. And we should check them. Krishna consciousness is a movement where we check ourselves to become pure, to become self-realized. Being discouraged because things don't go the way you'd like them to go. I don't see how they will because my feelings and plans have taken a rank in my life, and then God will, and then God's will is leading me. So somebody is doing a particular action, and then someone says, actually, you're going the wrong way, Prabhu, you shouldn't actually do that. Perhaps you can do it this way. Well, no, I'm not taking that instruction. Taking instruction. Even your guru sometimes can give you instruction. I'm not taking that instruction. So how do we overcome pride? We become aware of it and its effects and consciously work against it through our thoughts, words and deeds. We have to witness that we are fallen, conditioned souls, each and every one of us. Somehow or other we're caught in this prison house, we're captured, and we have to, in our words, our thoughts and our deeds, be consciously working against this pressure of pride. Really understanding that Krishna is the controller, and be grateful for whatever God gives us. Gratitude is a whole thing. You could do a whole class and understanding again from just this Govinda, this whole Govinda Leela. You could do a whole thing on gratitude. How grateful the residents of Vrindavan were to have Krishna in their presence. How grateful Indra was that Krishna forgave him. So, having great gratitude for what God has given us, positive or negative, and having faith that whatever Krishna has given to us is for our benefit, whatever happens. Faith means that we take one step towards Krishna, even if we're not sure about where that path is going to lead us. Sometimes we face dark and disturbing problems in our lives, whether it's social, financial, physical, psychological, even spiritual pursuits. There are sometimes dark and disturbing problems. Like recently, unfortunately, I had to, as chaplain, I had to help people that were passing away. Two young devotees, two young associate devotees, just coming to Krishna consciousness, finally understanding that the goal of life is actually to surrender to Krishna, and they passed away from cancer. Two of them at Peter McCullough's Institute. And I had to go there and help and try to figure out why these dark and depressive things have come upon these young devotees. It's difficult. You have to think it through, that everything is one step closer to Krishna, somehow or other, whether it's a positive thing or a negative thing. So by taking one step in faith, understanding somehow this is Krishna's arrangement, we move forward and get confidence and clarity to take the next step by faith. And then the next step, and then the next step, like that. So in Bhagavad Gita demonstrates this pragmatic process, the application of faith, when Arjuna, being overwhelmed by confusion, takes one step to clear him. And that step is humbly turning to Krishna as his devotee. Right? So in that exhibition that I'm currently doing, the painting exhibition, that's what I'm trying to depict. This surrender of Arjuna to Krishna. By the time Krishna completely expounds the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, the message of Gita, Arjuna becomes confident. Confident is a different thing. Confident and clear about carrying out Krishna's will. He knows what he has to do. He's confident, not proud. He's confident. And he became a powerful personality. My Christian interfaith friends would quote from the Bible, draw near to God and he will draw near to you. That's from the Bible, St. James. So we have it in the same way. We take one step towards Krishna, Krishna will take 100 steps towards us. By celebrating festivals like Govardhan Puja, we're utilizing that power of ritual. Ritual is a really important thing. Did you know that in your lives? That ritual is an important thing. This festival that we do of running around the hill, you know what it actually does? It actually links us to the original event. By reenacting that pastime, we actually connect with those Rijavasis back then, 5,000 years ago. You actually connect because we're all connected. through Krishna. When we celebrate ritualistic events and events like Garbhagriha Puja, you actually have that opportunity of connecting with those residents of Vrindavan that were circumambulating and holding and being ecstatic that Krishna was there. We feel that. To me, Govardhan Hill is probably the most fun festival that we have. I'm getting a little older, so it's harder for me to sort of run around, but we used to push and I remember pushing you and Sukadev and running around, and it was so wet from perspiration that people were slipping, and people were here for the first time, came to the temple for Govardhan Puja, and they were squashed up against the wall going, what the hell is going on here? And it was going faster and faster, and the kirtan was going on. Who felt ecstasy? And you saw the beautiful prasadam, and then prasadam was distributed. It's an amazing thing. But what actually happens by performing that event, that ritual, is you're connecting with those original Rishvasis who were there with Krishna holding up the hill. And when we meditate on that, if we can actually meditate on that, we are taken to that realm. And you experience it. So Krishna comes nearer and nearer to you. It's there also in other religious traditions as well. Like Christmas, it's reenacted. Whether they understand it or not is another thing. But we should understand that those rituals are so important. All over the world, Govardhan Puja is being carried out. Building the hill from prasadam, running around the hill with ecstatic kirtan and distributing prasadam at the end. All these lovely sweets and everything. What can we do during COVID-19 lockdown to celebrate this moment of history? Well, again, as I said, for those 20 people that have booked, God bless you. You are wonderful people. I love you. For us that are at home, we have to either do a small little COVID-19 hill ourselves and run around with our family, or just the two people that you're allowed to invite to your home. Or we have to read the pastimes of Govardhan Hill and close our eyes and just meditate. It's a really interesting thing to do that sometimes. You read the summary pre-chapter, right, of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and after you've read it, you just sit quietly in a quiet place and you go over that pastime in your mind and you visualize Krishna holding up the hill, and you visualize the cows and the cowherd men. You're part of that. You're linked to it, and you'll feel ecstasy. So in this situation where we have COVID-19 restrictions, perhaps you can do that, and you'll feel great ecstasy in that. Have a mini festival in your home, or link up.